bags of cream, red roses too. I see them blue.
Hello, this is Ed Cohen, editor and chief of globalbusinessnews.net, and your host on Global Radio Talkshow.com. Coming to you today from San Diego in California and Taipei in Taiwan. Let's welcome David Hall.
Hi, Ed.
So, David A. Hall, how long have you lived in Taiwan?
Ed, I've been in Taiwan for about 5 years. I was in China 5 years prior to that, so I've been here in East Asia for about 10 years now.
East Asia, okay. I think it's really admirable that Taiwan has grown so strong, so powerful in the midst of all of that, and with the giant China right there in the past being a menace, but I guess no longer. How is that happening? Can you give us a couple of minutes about that relationship?
There's a lot of opportunity here in Taiwan now. The time has never been greater. Taiwan is at a strategic point, looking to become the hub here in East Asia. There's a rapprochement, as you know, with China. The Cross Straits Agreement is moving forward, which includes 36 different sectors of trade and services. So times have never been better. The economy is great. Relations with China are warming. And there's a lot of opportunity now to be in the hub of East Asia.
Okay, I need to ask you a couple of questions about your comments about the hub of East Asia. How do you see that with Shanghai and Hong Kong and Tokyo also right in that market?
Right, Ed, that's a great question. China and Taiwan, of course, have a shared common language, a culture, and history. They are, you know, seen as big brother, little brother, and they have a special shared common culture. And once the rapprochement, once the Cross Straits Agreement goes through, there's going to be much more opportunity here in Taiwan to do business in China. Part of the Cross Straits Agreement will have a caveat where foreign companies that settle, and we'll talk a little more about how to do that later, that establish themselves here in Taiwan will have the same special access to the Chinese markets that Taiwan companies will have as well.
I'm looking at your LinkedIn page, and it says for a company name, USBCT/UI. What do those letters mean?
Well, Ed, there's a huge demand for training and development, learning and development here in Taiwan. To give you an example, the former Federal Reserve Chairman, Ben Bernanke, was in Taiwan last month. And of all the things that he could have chosen to talk about, he highlighted the need for Taiwanese companies to invest more in their people, to invest more in lifelong learning, training, and development as Taiwan continues to globalize. They have traditionally been about 80% manufacturing, which was mostly B2B, making iPhones, iPads, making products for other companies in the West. Now they're having to focus on the B2C market. You know, what are the emotional needs of your customer? So they really need to focus on the B2C market. So there's a lot of opportunity, and we developed a company called USBCT. It's U.S. Business Coaching Taiwan, and we recently partnered with Universal Ideas of China. My good friend Ira Cohen in Beijing. I knew him from the American Chamber of Commerce. He sat on the board in Beijing. We decided to partner to bring his training services conference to Taipei. He has held it successfully for 18 years in Shanghai and Beijing. We wanted to bring this conference to Taipei, to have kind of a triad or triangle of business across the straits between Beijing, Shanghai, and Taipei.
Your conference, I see, will be in Taipei on January 15, 2016. Is that correct?
That's right, Ed. We've got the support of the Nehu Technology Park Association, who we've partnered with. We're located right in the tech park. There's about five technology parks here in Taiwan. We're located in two of the tech parks. One is called Hsinchu, and the other one is Nehu. And we are partnering with the Tech Association. We're partnering with the Taipei City Government CoSpace and several other large multinational sponsors. We really want to promote this idea of developing the 21st century employee, giving employees multicultural and cross-cultural communication skills as they globalize and come into the global market.
Okay, now I want to shift gears to your post earlier today about design thinking. I read it, and it is absolutely fascinating, particularly the charts showing the Google business plan and the cross-cultural matrix. So let's back up. Tell us about design thinking and relate it to what you were just talking about regarding training.
Well, this is a hot area, Ed, and the reason is, as you know, that I mean, the world is not only changing faster, but it's changing faster and faster. It's not only becoming flatter, but it's becoming flatter and flatter. You know, we're inundated every day with petabytes, terabytes of data. We have about 40 to 60,000 thoughts a day. How do we manage all of that data in this new age? You know, we're constantly bombarded and inundated. Design thinking helps us to have a new mindset, a new frame of reference to deal with all this information. We can take design thinking and we can apply it to any situation. It's no longer just for products. Harvard Business Review devoted almost the entire September issue on design thinking and how it now is being used by executives for management, for strategy, across departments, sales, marketing, customer service, even finance. Traditionally, finance might think they don't need design thinking. They don't need to be creative or innovative. However, they might be sending out, say, for instance, a bill. So that is a customer touch point, and it's an opportunity to focus on design thinking, which puts the human first, Ed. It takes the human, puts them back in the equation, and looks at what is the emotional experience of the human. And design thinking is a very interactive process. It has a bias towards action. So, you know, it's the traditional method of coming up with an idea, guarding it with your life, and then getting it patented and pushing it out on your audience using what they used to call interruptive marketing. You remember the, you know, Ginsu knives or something, the famous marketing ads, you know, the infomercials. You know, you would push it out and, you know, hope it worked. Design thinking focuses on the human, and it reduces the cost and the risk of designing any product and service.
I'm looking at your graphic, which is part of this design plan and pitch. And on the left side, there's a graphic about empathy with interactive arrows. And this refers to what? Understanding the mindset and the emotions and the life of your customer, not just the fact that they have a bank account that you want some money from. Is that correct?
Exactly. Exactly. It focuses on the human emotional experience, it really empathizing about their experience. And that is done through an interactive interviewing and feedback process. You want to interview the individual, interview the customer or partner, and get them to divulge as much information, the more personal, the better. And that information is going to be brought back, and then you're going to develop what's called a problem statement. So you're going to actually take that feedback, write it down in a problem statement, and then you're going to begin the fun part, which is the ideation, the brainstorming, the mind mapping, coming up with ideas. And then from there, it's a very interactive, hands-on program. You're going to actually sketch it out. So you're using all of your senses. You're, you know, seeing, hearing, feeling, thinking. So you're immersed in the process. You're drawing pictures. You're sketching, like the famous Taiwanese director Ang Lee. You know, he may sketch out the storyboards. Even though we have all these computer graphics and all this new multimedia, a lot of the great thinkers still sketch things out on paper. They may storyboard it. And we do the same thing. We sketch it out. We want you to see it, feel it. And then you're able to build a kind of a pseudo prototype. So we actually have kind of the arts and crafts. So we have paper, we have rubber bands, we have everything that you need to build a small prototype. And it's not about being an artist. It's about just seeing something in the physical world that you can actually put your hands on. So you may cut out something, put it in, and this was developed at Stanford University in the D school, the design school. And we use that as part of our program where you get a hands-on feeling.
What I'm hearing, David, is that it's very okay to fail. It's very okay to experiment and sort of like a no fault. You just try and try again and bounce the new idea across. And, okay, how does this one look? Is that sounding correct?
That's exactly right, Ed. It's fail and fail fast through an iterative process, small incremental improvements. So you go back to your customer, interview, feedback, back to improve, interview, feedback, show them, back to improve. So it's this back and forth interactive process the whole way. It saves time. It saves money. A lot of the companies that I've worked with, we work with startups, we work with SMEs, and we work with large Taiwan and China ICT companies as well. It enables you, right, to fail fast, to reduce the risk to a matter of, you know, might be days or weeks rather than months and years. A lot of companies put maybe years and millions of dollars. They make code and code and code. And then, you know, a few years down the road, they find out, you know, what they did didn't work. And this was, there are infamous stories from the dot-com boom. I helped to build 10 startup companies. Many in the Boston, Cambridge area where you lived. I lived right across from the street from where you went to school. We know these stories of pets.com, the famous dot-com bust, WebMD. These companies back during the dot-com boom, if they would have used design thinking, they wouldn't have burned through millions, tens of millions of dollars, and then gone belly up.
Now, the process builds trust, builds rapport, because without that, you can't get to the prototype and go beyond. Is that correct?
Well, that's really a good point, Ed. It really does. You are building a relationship and rapport at the same time. So that's a very good point. And I think I will stress that now that you have brought that up. I think I will stress that even more in our programs.
Okay, thank you. So now I want to go down the page here because it's really fascinating that the evolution of design thinking, if you will, that's the article, but you say that there's brainstorming. So this means the conversation back and forth. Is that correct?
Right. Brainstorming, as we traditionally think about it, is somebody sitting, coming up with a few ideas and writing them down. we go through a process that really gets the creative juices flowing and gets the best ideas. So, you know, we will have a group. You know, we go around. We we'll put post-its up on the wall. We get as many great ideas until they're exhausted. We go one by one, and everyone has to give some idea, no matter how silly, how funny. We give all the ideas, but you know, we don't stop there. A lot of people stop there with the brainstorming. We actually put them down. We put them on post-it notes. We put them on the whiteboard, and then we group them. We categorize them. We say, okay, these ideas kind of fit into this group. These ideas, you know, fit into this group. And then we categorize them. What do we want to name this group? Then we begin the process of judging. You never judge during a brainstorming session. You want the ideas to just flow from your subconscious without even thinking about it. The subconscious is very, very powerful. You know, it works at, you know, 6 to 8 million bytes, or, you know, in computer language, you can think 6 to 8 megabytes, MB. The logical thinking brain, the frontal cortex, neofrontal cortex, it works at about, we can remember an 8 or 10 digit phone number. So that's about 8 or 10 bytes, right? You could think of 8 or 10 KB. So we want to employ the power of our subconscious during the brainstorming. And then we group, we categorize, then we judge what we have. And then we begin to prioritize what we have. So we go through a whole logical and strategic process. We use techniques to get the best ideas. We don't just, you know, sit and think of a few ideas, write them down, and you're finished.
So to get this to the customer, and to, first of all, define what customer you're talking about, who is that person, let me jump aside here and interject a thought that dealing in a few megatrends going on right now, we've been in one called globalization, which means markets developing, growing middle class in India and China and Brazil and Mexico and other places. So there's like millions and millions and millions of customers developing for global products in addition to local products. So we're talking here selling internationally, cross-border, cross-culturally. So when it comes to selling things to people who are very, very different from me and you and others, you got to hit them where it's hot. So that's where you're cross-cultural communications and understanding comes in. So people in, say, Germany or in Japan are very, very different than people in Mexico or Brazil. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's exactly right, Ed. You know, traditionally, the way that global leaders, the way that companies used to do things is, well, however I do it in my country, I'll just do the same in another culture, in another country. If I'm from a very top-down hierarchical society, and I'm managing or I'm developing or I'm marketing in another culture that's a non-hierarchical society, I'll just do things the same way. Well, that's no longer viable. The world is becoming, as I say, not only flatter, but flatter and flatter. It's now important to know if you're persuading, negotiating, pitching, marketing to someone in Germany versus someone in the U.S., it's very different. Okay, Germany is a principle-centered culture, where the U.S. is application-based, principle-based versus application-based. If you're in Germany, they may want to know, you know, why am I included in this? How did you come up with the decision? What's the big picture? What's the principle? If you're in Germany and you use the kind of bullet point American application based way of thinking, Germans will be offended. They will say, yeah, you know what? Do you think I'm not smart enough to understand what you're talking about? Why are you, you know, speaking so simplistically with me? And in the U.S., it's application-based. You know, they just want to know, how does it work? You know, give me bullet points. So we run into this with a lot of the companies we work with here. We work with a major semiconductor company here in Taiwan. You know, last year, they say, hey, we're not global. We only do business in China. You know, we may not need this program. Well, you know what? They came calling me 6 months later. They say, hey, you know what? We had an order from the largest mobile device company in China. They want us to increase our order time from 3 to 4 years to 3 to 4 months. And we had to go and open 5 global locations. And they started encountering cultural difficulties from the very beginning. You know, how do I communicate? Taiwan is a what's called a high context language culture, high context language. You know, a lot of hidden meaning, as everyone knows, especially in Japan, where in the West, in the U.S., maybe very low context language. So there's not a lot of hidden meaning. We say what we mean. So by not understanding cross-cultural communications, a lot of business is going to be lost. And sometimes it is difficult to measure how much business am I losing and can I attribute it to poor communications, poor cross-cultural communications.
So we're getting close to, unfortunately, the end of our session here, but we're talking about engineering, but not from the linear point of view. This is more elliptical, or you probably have a better word than that, but the engineering of all this is mental. It's engineering a global mindset to do global business better.
Right, Ed. It's we need to go through the training portion in a linear process. But you know, you may go, like you had mentioned previously, identifying your customer segment, your primary customer. So you may go back and forth several times, so you can kind of see it as circles, and some of them are overlapping, and you might be going back and forth to these circles. You're not just following a line from, you know, point A to point B. Design thinking is really a mindset. It's really a frame of reference in this new world. And we can take this and apply it to any situation, any challenge, any project. So it is a mindset, Ed, and it's not just, okay, we follow this, you know, we do this, and then we do this, and then we do this. Okay, it really is circles and overlapping circles and going back and forth between and among these circles, and it's a frame of reference, and it's like anything. When you initially do it, it's very mechanistic. You know, think of an artist. You know, a lot of artists hate to go to art school, right? I was in Newport, Rhode Island. RISD is the famous art school. I had a lot of friends. They hate to go to art school, right? Because they have to learn all the different areas, sketching and different things. They just want to create art. So it is a little bit, it may seem a little mechanistic in the beginning, but it will become a style, a frame of reference, and an art form down the road, Ed. And it will save you. You spend a little time, invest a little time now, will save you months and years and millions of dollars later.
Thank you for your time. That's David A. Hall, Nehu Technology Park in Taipei. David, how can people reach you?
Well, I appreciate it, Ed. It's been a pleasure being here today. You can Google us. You can find us on any of the social media. I'm across dozens of networks. Just put in USBCT, that's U.S. Business Coaching Taiwan. Find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, pretty much across any social network. So you can just Google it, USBCT. You might want to throw, you know, Taipei or Taiwan, USBCT Taiwan, USBCT Taipei, or something of that nature. And you can find us. Our email is service@usbct.com.tw. So it's .com.tw.
Thank you for being my guest special interview today, David A. Hall, from Taipei in Taiwan. Thank you very much. This is Ed Cohen signing off in Old Town, San Diego, on Global Radio Talk Show.com.
Yes, I think to myself, wonderful.